Warren Buffett, BlackRock, and other institutional players dominate investments in commercial aviation. Why? Because it's one of the most profitable and predictable alternative assets that exists. And it's not tied to other markets, such as real estate and the stock market. Is it safe? Well, imagine triple net leases to the likes of American Airlines and British Airways. Income is contractual and guaranteed by some of the biggest named airlines in the world. That's why this kind of investment was never available to the ordinary accredited investor. That is until now. Visit accesswealthaviation.com and check it out for yourself. Invest in an institutional team with over 200 plus years of combined investment experience in the aviation sector. Conservative investing with double-digit returns and tax advantages. That's accesswealthaviation.com, accesswealthaviation.com.
You are listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast with Buck Joffrey. Get ready to change your life.
Welcome, everybody. This is Buck Joffrey with the Wealth Formula Podcast coming to you from Montecito, California. I am excited about the Thanksgiving coming here. I'm actually moving to a new house, and that's pretty exciting for me. And you know what else is exciting? Is that the Minnesota Vikings are kicking butt. We are 8-1, and we are playing on Thanksgiving. So I'm super excited about that. In fact, I am going to the Minnesota Vikings game this upcoming Sunday, which is, basically the day that this podcast will release anyway. But anyway, we're playing Dallas, and it should be great fun. Looking forward to it, and I'm hoping you are looking forward to the holidays as much as I am. So as for today, well, in tradition, I usually do these Ask Buck shows around the holidays. I feel like it's sort of a fireside kind of thing, right? Like we're the fireside chat or whatever. You know, it's just kind of a little bit more personal, a little something that seems befitting of the holiday season. Anyway, so that's what we're going to do. We're going to have a few different questions from a variety of the audience there. And if you are interested, make sure, because we can have multiple shows here, to go to wealthformula.com and click on Ask Buck and make sure that, you know, I'm going to prefer questions that are recorded. So that's generally the ones I look at first. So hopefully you can do that. You're not too shy about it. Otherwise, you can always also, you know, just write your question and I'll also get to it. But I like hearing people's voices as well. Anyway, Ask Buck after these messages.
Worried about saving too little too late for retirement? The Wealth Accelerator may be exactly what you need. With the help of some of the oldest and most reliable insurance companies in the country, Wealth Accelerator allows you to take most of the upside of any good year in the stock market and use bank loans to magnify those returns significantly. And what if the stock market has a bad year? No need to fear. Wealth Accelerator is engineered so you don't participate in the losses of the market, no matter how bad of a year it is. Sounds too good to be true, right? But it's not. It's simply the same financial engineering that the ultra wealthy have been doing for years. Now it's your turn. Check it out for yourself by going to wealthformulabanking.com. Again, that's wealthformulabanking.com.
Self-storage is a necessary evil. It's where you keep your stuff and forget about it. No wonder this stuff is so profitable and recession-resistant. The Wealth Formula community, well, we've benefited from that. We've made lots of money in this space with Reliant Real Estate, one of the largest self-storage companies in the country. With an average investor internal rate of return of almost 34%, with hold times just over 3.5 years, these guys know what the meaning of velocity of money is. If you're an accredited investor, make sure to check out what they're up to right now at ReliantFund4.com. Again, that's ReliantFund4.com.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Well, before we begin, let me just comment on a few things that are going on in the economy and markets that I think are of interest. Last month, there was a slowdown in inflation. Less inflation than expected that was forecasted. So that's good news. I suspect that we're going to get this inflation thing under control and we're going to end up in a fairly deep recession for a bit. You know, I wouldn't worry too much about the zombie apocalypse right now. I think we're you know, we're not there yet. But I do think that we're looking at a recession coming up, and that could be real opportunities to buy as well, as we'll get into in one of these questions. The other thing I wanted to just comment on real quick is the cryptocurrency market. And, you know, it's funny because last week's show, when I recorded that, it was actually the first day of this whole FTX debacle. For those of you who know what happened, but basically one of the biggest companies in cryptocurrency, it turned out, had a lot of fraudulent activity going on there. And so it really shook the foundation of the crypto world. And I think there's still fallout to be had. I mean, we have to look at what's going to happen with some of these lenders that were deeply involved with FTX, like BlockFi, who actually froze assets. So that's not good. If you've got assets there, there might be some danger to you. So I know, keep an eye on that, and I'll continue talking about it as well. But I think the thing to take home from this is that, again, we know from even from talking from last week, our expert on this topic, that this is an area that's in its infancy, and we're still weeding out the bad players, the pet.coms of this era and that kind of thing. And I think that's where we're at. I do think that, you know, again, going back to the creed of Warren Buffett, being greedy when others are fearful is a good idea. And to the extent that maybe you're not into the alts, but I do think this is potentially a really, really good time to load up on some Bitcoin. We'll also have some potential, you know, Bitcoin related mining opportunities coming up in Investor Club as well. By the way, if you would like to join, if you're an accredited investor and you are interested in potentially deploying some capital, check out wealthformula.com and sign up for Investor Club. And then there's an onboarding process there that you can go through and then get exposure to some of these things that I kind of mentioned in passing. All right, so let's move on quickly here to the first recorded question from Zach.
Hi, Buck. I'm mostly an equities and seed round venture investor, but have been trying to build a multifamily portfolio. While some private equity groups have maintained a lot of deal flow, it seems like Western Wealth Capital has slowed down this year. To me, this seems like the smart strategic move given the interest rate environment. Do you think it would be unwise to invest in multifamily opportunities now? And as for Western Wealth Capital, do you think we need to see interest rate cuts in order for good opportunities to arise again? Or will there be high value opportunities as prices fall?
Great question, Zach. So yes, at Western Wealth Capital and Turo Asset Management Group, you know, we're not buying anything right now. We haven't bought anything. I think the last acquisition that we had through our group in real estate was in May through Turo, right before things kind of went south. And the reason for that is because of the rapid increases in interest rates. And you alluded to that, but I want to emphasize the rapid increase as part of it, right? Volatility is creating a real problem, and I'll get to that in a second. As for others who may be acquiring multifamily property right now, listen, I don't know really how they're doing it responsibly, because I just don't know how you underwrite in this environment. In order to underwrite, you have to have confidence in some of your projections, which requires that you have some assumptions to use, right? And almost all apartment buildings are bought with some level of leverage. So the assumption that you have to have some confidence in is interest rates. And they're all over the, you know, they're just going up rapidly. So we don't really know. So rather than, you know, I think the interest rates going up is sort of like a falling knife, right? Don't try to catch it, right? You just wait till it stabilizes. And that is, in our opinion, that's where the opportunities are going to come. Now, the exception to that is if there's some kind of fire sale, which we could have soon. You know, I think there is some artificial stuff keeping the levees up right now. But the dams could break pretty soon for some assets out there. And if you can buy those at clearly undervalued prices, regardless of, you know, some volatility in the interest rates, then you might look into it. But short of that, you know, if you're trying to actually, you know, do what we normally do, which is, you know, have some assumptions and rates and move forward, then we may have to wait a little bit of time for that to happen. So again, you know, Western Wealth Capital, Turo Asset Management Group, we don't feel that it's prudent right now to underwrite stuff when we can't even make assumptions about interest rates that I believe any intelligent investor ought to be making. And so right now, again, the goalposts are moving too quickly when it comes to interest rates. Volatility is what kills markets, right? Volatility is what kills markets, not necessarily the absolute number of the interest rates. And that, I think that sort of addresses your question about, you know, whether there'll be opportunities in the future. You see, as long as rates are relatively stable at some point, it'll be time once again, you know, that we can acquire assets because we'll be able to create a pro forma that we believe. You know, high rates are not the problem, right? People have made a ton of money in real estate, regardless of the, you know, how high interest rates have been. That's not the issue. The volatility is once the rates are stable, we just focus on the projected delta. That's all we need to do, right? So we have an assumption that rates will be around a certain level. And then we maybe like, you know, maybe we're conservative about it, but we know that our, you know, we're hopeful that our conservative number is not actually too low, right? So you have to be in that kind of position where you can start, you know, really feeling like, you know, you're doing your best to make these pro formas make sense. But once there's stability, what I would expect is for, you know, markets to adjust to the new realities that come with those higher interest rates, both on the buying side and on the selling side. And then I think the markets are going to resume at that point. So that said, again, you know, we are in the business of value-add real estate. So we're only concerned about the price we buy and the projected value and resultant increase in the value of the property. So absolute numbers don't matter. We start buying when rates stabilize and when there's a fire, or if there's a fire sale, which I said again, could happen soon. But hopefully that answers your question. I don't know. I mean, I hear there are some groups out there buying right now, but I mean, you just have to look around, right? I mean, it's a little unnerving that people think that they can underwrite in this. You know, they may not be projecting out more than a year, you know. All right, let's see. Next question is from Nick.
Hey, Buck. Nick Dyke from Michigan. I'm just curious if you've discussed on your show the theory of population collapse, particularly, number one, if it's a real threat in the short term or near term, and also how it may impact your strategic planning with your investment style moving forward. You know, the old Elon Musk fear that we're not replacing ourselves at an appropriate rate, and how the decrease in reproductive rates over all of the countries for the last X number of years, how that may impact the economy overall. Is this a risk in the next 5 to 10 years, next generation? Thanks.
Thanks for the question, Nick. And I will say, well, let me just start out by saying I liked Elon Musk better when we never heard from him. I used to really kind of think he was the cool dude, you know, with Tesla and PayPal and all this stuff, but now he's just annoying. Now I feel like he just says stuff to get attention for himself. Like he's like this, you know, nerd who's been overachieving his whole life, and all of a sudden he wants to be, you know, popular. And he goes out there and he just says stuff to say stuff to get attention. You don't need to go much further going back to crypto and the whole Dogecoin thing. He doesn't believe in Dogecoin. He created hype because he thought it was funny and, you know, it was antithetical to what people in, you know, Bitcoin and that sort of thing really believed, that there was any value to this. He got on board and he drove the price up, and then a lot of people ended up buying it, and then it crashed and people lost money. And, you know, I guess if you're the richest man in the world, maybe you don't understand that, you know, these people who are making these investments based on the BS that you talk about are actually people who can't really afford to lose that money. Anyway, let's go back to your question. The reality is, if you look at the numbers right now, global population is growing despite declines in some parts of the world. Demographers generally agree that the global population will hit 8 billion actually today. I'm not even joking. 8 billion people is supposed to happen today. And of course, I'm recording this on November 15th. So November 15th, we hit 8 billion people, global population. And then sometime in the next 8 years or so, we're supposed to get to about 8.5 billion. You know, these same scientists and mathematicians who are focused on this stuff also think the world's population is going to continue to increase and hit 10.4 billion in 2080, at which point there is a 50% chance that there'll be a plateau or begin to decrease by 2100. So hopefully that's something that we can worry about, but 2100 is a long time from now for most of us. But here's something interesting. Global population now is driven less by birth rate and more by the fact that fewer people are dying young because of advances in healthcare and expansion of healthcare. I mean, look at these, a lot of these third world countries are really poor and stuff. They're finally getting some, you know, antibiotics and some drugs actually so that they don't die of things that we, you know, in the West that we haven't really died from for 50, you know, not 50, like 150 years, you know, something like that. So anyway, that brings me to my next point. I actually believe that we will be living even longer than current projections suggest. And those of you who came to our last meeting saw, you know, why, because there's this tremendous advancement in the science of longevity and lifespan. And I've been very vocal on this issue. I really believe we're on the precipice of huge leaps in longevity and health span. And that could make the population grow even higher. Now, you might say, well, yeah, but, you know, if you get a bunch of 100-year-old people, will they be working? Well, the science here is the idea is that, like, people will be working much later into life. And for two reasons, really. First, because they can and they'll need to because they're going to live longer. But the other is that they'll be healthy enough to do it. So, like, you know, somebody who's 85 years old now, you know, might most 85-year-olds probably are not in great shape to be working in an office or whatever. But the idea is that over time that they will be. And so that is going to change perspective. Now, remember, you know, the turn of the last century, I mean, I would be like retired in a grandpa or something like that, you know, and I'm 49. And that's the truth. I won't lie about that. I am 49. So another thing. We're Americans, right? And in the United States, we have the additional advantage of being a nation of immigrants. Now, if we need more people, we just let more people in. And you just have to go back in history to the 1960s during the Vietnam War. There was a shortage of men for technical positions like engineers and people going to medical school and stuff like that. Just sad because, you know, it was in part because of the number of people who died in Vietnam. But what the U.S. did then is they opened the gates to skilled immigrants. So my dad was part of that in the late 60s. He came as an engineer on an engineering scholarship. Of course, he became a real estate guy shortly thereafter. But he and a whole bunch of his friends. And you ever wonder why there's so many darn, you know, Indian doctors and engineers. Well, that's why they all started. They came then, and then, you know, generations after that kind of followed suit. So there's one more thing to add. I should just point out that, you know, U.S. policy right now is pretty anti-immigration, but, you know, that could change pretty quickly, right? I mean, it's a fad of the day. There is a nationalist element going throughout the world, which, you know, is what it is. But I think eventually we have the advantage of being able to open those doors and creating more population here as well. The last thing to address on this issue is specific to our investments, my investment strategy, right? So we have pretty reliable data on population growth for the next, you know, 10 years at least. And it's going up, you know. We keep this in mind when we choose the location of our acquisition because certain areas will disproportionately grow because of jobs and taxes, and we're constantly evaluating this data. So that's important to remember. We're very heavy, obviously, in Texas. We're heavy in Arizona. And there's reasons for that. It's because there's a tremendous amount of population growth there already, and jobs keep flying in, and that's what we do. So, you know, I think that's my opinion on the population issue. But, you know, we constantly monitor these things and look at population growth. And I think the key is to understand where the puck is going and to get there before the puck, right? So that's the idea in our investing strategy. All right. Next question is from, I believe it's Jens.
Hi, Buck. I love your show. I had a question regarding bonus depreciation, which is now being phased out. I was wondering if you could do an episode elaborating a little bit on whether real estate professional status could still be a reasonable route to go, even if you just focus on passive syndication investments. Thank you very much for everything. Bye-bye.
Okay, so a couple things. Thanks for the question first. Let's just, at the very end of your question, I wanted to address that first. So you can't be a real estate professional with only passive syndication investments. You have to fulfill the criteria of an active real estate investor. So I'm not a tax professional, so I can't give you advice. But what I believe to be the case is that you cannot, you can't be solely a passive investor in real estate and earn the real estate professional designation. There has to be an active component to that. So you need to own some property. You have to log a certain number of hours, and it has to be something that you do more than you do of anything else time-wise. So, but that's for another time. The point is, let's talk about your question regarding bonus depreciation. The thing is that bonus depreciation, the way it is right now, which is 100% depreciation of personal property, it really was only available in real estate for developers, not those buying real estate, used real estate. But under the Trump tax changes in 2017, it really became something we could use. It didn't matter at that point if it was construction or if it was a 50-year-old property. But before we get into that too deep, let's take a step back for a moment. What are we depreciating anyway, right? Well, you've got two components of that. First, you have real property, which is stuff that basically like land and, you know, the structure itself that you can't just pull out and throw on the lawn. And then you have personal property, which is the stuff that you can pull out and throw on the lawn. So that's really important because there's something called a cost segregation analysis that separates those two. And why is that important? Well, if you didn't do a cost segregation analysis, basically there's a straight line depreciation of 27 and a half years on apartment buildings, and you just, you know, divide the cost of your acquisition, divided by 27 and a half years, and that's what your yearly depreciation schedule would be. But the cost segregation study, which, by the way, has been around for a long time and isn't going anywhere, it has independent of the bonus depreciation laws. It's an engineering study that separates real property, which is stuff that cannot be yanked out, thrown on the lawn, etc., and personal property. Now, the significance of this study is that the personal property component is depreciable over 5 years instead of 27 and a half years, which is the real property. So in other words, it's still a great deal for real estate investors, even without bonus depreciation, right? Because then you're still getting, that depreciation over 5 years of the personal property. Now, what bonus depreciation did from 2017 through this year, 2022, was to make it possible for investors to depreciate personal property, not over 5 years, but all in the first year. And that was pretty dramatic, because if you think about residential real estate, it's not always the case, but it seems to be the trend based on, a lot of cost segregation analysis studies that I have been a part of through real estate that I own, that about 30% of an acquisition price tends to be allocated towards personal property and the rest real property. Again, that is a complete estimate, but I will say that's a pretty good assumption, in my opinion. I use that all the time. Now, if you only put down 30% to acquire that property, which is typical, right? If you're using leverage and you have 70% loan to value, that 30% that you put down essentially, well, guess what? Well, you just offset your investment completely with depreciation, right? Like you were deducting your own down payment. Let me say that again. On average, what I have seen is 30% of a property being deemed personal property. And then you only put down 30%. So what happens? It's almost like the government's paying for your down payment. That's what it's like. So you effectively write all that off. And that's really why this has been so magical. Now, of course, you can only do this against other, take that depreciation against other passive investments. That is, of course, if you are not designated as a real estate professional. If you are a real estate professional, you can use that depreciation that I just talked about, that 30%, not only against passive income, but all income, because it is considered active losses. Depreciation for a real estate professional are considered active losses. I am not a tax professional, but I was about to say I play one on TV. No, but I have been around this stuff enough to get an idea. But again, never rely on my information as fact. Don't do that and then come back and sue me, please. Anyway, from 2017 to 2022, as we talked about, that bonus depreciation is and was 100% of the personal property. Now, this changes actually next year. In 2023, it'll only be 80% and then continue to reduce by 20% per year until it's gone. But remember from before, even without bonus depreciation, cost segregation analysis is going to result in accelerated depreciation, and there still will be ongoing tax benefits to real estate. And as you asked about being a real estate professional. So anyway, hopefully that answers your question. Now, we've been going already for almost a half hour, so I'm going to just jump to one last comment. Actually, it was a comment that I wanted just to address. And I'm not going to read the comments specifically. It was an email that someone sent me a couple weeks ago that, you know, I actually really appreciated. Basically, the guy was like, "Hey, Buck, I'm a big fan, but I don't like the direction you've taken the last few months. It seems like you just got a bunch of authors and people write books and stuff like that." And so I was thinking about it, and I really do appreciate that feedback because, well, let me tell you why things have gone in that direction a bit. First of all, I'm trying to get away from interviewing the same people that come up in every real estate podcast, right? Like, it's just like circular talk, right? And getting each other amped up, and you hear the same thing on three different podcasts and you really start to believe it. But in reality, it's just the same guy's opinion, right? So I'm trying to get away from that. So I don't really like to interview people who are, you know, constantly in the podcast, the real estate podcast ecosystem. And I think there's a real danger in getting the same people talking about the same stuff on multiple podcasts again. So, you know, it just doesn't provide much opportunity to get other ideas. Next, I didn't want to keep talking about the same thing on every podcast. You know, I mean, I figured it would be better for people to get exposure to different stuff other than tax, estate planning, real estate. And in reality, I do think I may have gone off the rails a little bit with this in retrospect. I think we've been doing a lot of stuff that may be less interesting to you as an investor. You know, some of the self-help-y stuff, business book types, all that. I get it. I totally get it. And I think I'm going to have to go back and shift a little bit. But warning, there's still a couple of those that have already been recording it in the lineup. So don't get upset with me for that. Finally, the last thing, you know, just commenting about, like, you know, why I interview or who I interview, what I do, is that a lot of people in this real estate podcast space are actually raising capital. And I have to be extremely careful who I interview, because I learned the hard way a couple of times now that even if I start with, I'm not an investor, this is for interest, et cetera, and this is something you should do your own due diligence on, people will inevitably often assume that I have my stamp of approval on something that I really don't, because I don't have, and I've not done a significant amount of, you know, actual research on the offering or the people, et cetera. So rather than risk that, and, you know, there's obviously, I don't want you guys to get hurt. I also don't want to get sued. I try to stay away from those types, unless, of course, I'm part of the, you know, I'm a partner in there, then I really can have some confidence that there's something that I believe in. And so I'll do that. So you'll hear guys from, you know, you hear from Western Wealth Capital, or you'll hear from Turo, Dante at Turo, and that kind of thing. You know, so unless there's someone who's coming out, who's an investment that has undergone like a significant broker dealer type due diligence, I'm just not going to interview those people. Anyway, so I can't do that anymore. But again, thank you for reminding me to keep it real, keep it granular, because that's what I will do. Anyway, let's take a break and we'll be right back here. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Thank you so much for joining this episode of Ask Buck. I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Think about potentially gifting somebody a course from Your Roadmap to Real Wealth, which is a course that then leads into Wealth Formula Network, which is our community online, and also the foreman that does the biweekly Zoom video calls. Check that out at wealthformularoadmap.com. That's it for me this week on Wealth Formula Podcast. Make sure to send in your questions if you want to get on next week, maybe. That's it for me. This is Buck Joffrey signing off.
Thank you for listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast. Visit us on the web at wealthformula.com. The information contained in this podcast are opinions, not fact. As always, consult your own financial team before making any investment. See you next time.
Buck Joffrey here from Sapio with Buck Joffrey. Aging might become reversible over the next 10 to 20 years. It's already being done in lab animals, so it's just a matter of time. Our challenge? To be healthy enough for when that time comes. As a former scientist and surgeon myself, my goal is to figure out how to do that and to share it with you. I wrote a book called Living Longer for Busy People that you can download for free at sapiopodcast.com. You'll be amazed at just how a few daily adjustments can add years of a healthy life for you. Again, download it for free, sapiopodcast.com.